Hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Timothy Farmer Appellant versus the City of Rapid City, Appalachia. For the appellant, we have Mr. Courtney Claiborne, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the Appalachia City of Rapid City, we have Mr. Jason Green, also from Rapid City. Mr. Claiborne, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Courtney Claiborne, and as noted, I have the opportunity to present the appeal of Officer Timothy Farmer to you here today. Officer Farmer was employed by the City of Rapid City and, prior to his termination, which took place following an event in March of 2009. This matter has made its way through several levels of appeal, including some internal and administrative appeals in the City of Rapid City, as well as the Department of Labor through the Circuit Court, and is now before you today. The issues that we are going to present deal primarily with the standards which were applied and the view which was taken towards Officer Farmer's termination. The standard and the term that is going to be used primarily today is that of just cause. And just cause, as defined in our briefs and in the submissions, includes basically two parts. There's an objective part of just cause, which deals with the standards by which we're going to judge the behaviors of the officer or the wrong party who was terminated in this case. And then there's the fairness part of just cause. Both of those involve a review by this court, which gives a whole new look to what transpired and what took place in this matter. And at their root is just the simple element of a fundamental fairness and a fair shake, which we do not believe was given to Officer Farmer. One of the primary reasons we feel that way is, as with any case, you have to first have a solid foundation of facts from which you're going to then proceed to apply the law. Those two things taken together then will form a solid decision. In this case, however, we do not feel that there is that strong framework of fundamental facts that were first developed and viewed by the lower courts, which provide then that solid basis to apply the law and to make a reasoned decision. One of the most glaring omissions by the lower courts is the failure to recognize that there is, adopted by the City of Rapid City, an objective standard for the behavior of a police officer. And in this case, it's the use of force policy that's implemented by the Rapid City Police Department. Only one witness was called on to really testify about the implementation of the policy, the training of the officers on the policy, and its use in the field. And that was Detective Warren Poaches. Warren Poaches testified that he is the training officer for the police department. And as so, he gets to then tell the officers, this is how we implement this policy and this is what we expect from you. And when doing so, the officers are actually trained that this is a plus one policy. And what that means is that the officers can engage and use the level of force actually above that level that they are contemplating. So you don't have to follow the use of force in order. It is a continuum. You can go to the next step. In this case, the use of force policy, as it applied to Officer Farmer, has as its first basis officer presence. So the first basis would be the officer would do something or have something to signify that he is present. In this case, that was Officer Farmer arriving at the scene, and he was in the standard police issue vehicle, standard police issue clothing, activated a siren when he was electing to or attempting to effectuate a stop. And it should be pointed out that the use of force policy is all determined to effectuate control of the subject. So the first step in that use of force policy is officer presence. That was without a doubt and without contradiction established with the lights and the uniform. The second level, then, is a verbal command. The officer can elect a verbal command to attempt to effectuate and control his subjects. Here, that verbal command was get on the ground. Given clearly, not obeyed. The review of the police department itself notes that when Officer Farmer activated his lights, got out of the car, and yelled a verbal command, the subjects actually, in the reviewing department's policy or in their findings, said the perpetrators were fleeing. Sergeant Peterson found that they were proceeding in different directions quickly. Captain Thrash found that they were fleeing. That is, they heard the officer. Two people took off in two different directions. The third, then, method is the use of a soft, open hand techniques. And that's that the officer can physically engage with the suspect and attempt to maneuver them in order to gain control. Officer Farmer did employ empty and soft techniques without avail and moved on to the fourth, which is hard techniques, which would include things like takedowns, arm bars. And ultimately, he did effectuate control of these subjects through the use of those procedures in line and in order and all objective. There is no dispute that Officer Farmer did follow the use of force continuum in order to effectuate control. And that is an essential finding that needs to be made and has been ignored by the lower courts. The reason that that finding is so important is that the applicable law to the case then starts and says, when we are looking at just cause, we have an objective part and a fundamental fairness part. The objective part of just cause says that first, the Supreme Court of the United States has pointed out that when making any stop or trying to effectuate any arrest, there is necessary the right to use some degree of physical force or maybe even the threat of physical force to gain that control, and that's in the Graham versus Connor case we cited. But more importantly, the law requires that there be applied an objective reasonableness, standard, and this is so that officers in the field know that they're going to be judged objectively by things they were taught. And specifically, when we talk about just cause, the Briggs versus Board of Directors Iowa case that we cited notes that just cause cannot include reasons that are arbitrary, unfair, or generated out of a vendetta. So when we talk about the arbitrary standards being applied after the fact versus the objective reasonableness required by our United States Supreme Court, you arrive at the fact that we want to give these officers a fair shake to employ that which they were taught without, as the court said, without the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, because that's not fair to the officer. The court in the Graham case goes on to note that oftentimes officers are forced to make split-second decisions in situations that are ever-changing, and therefore you must give deference to that officer when they follow these objective standards. Where this case fell apart and failed was, we'll back up to the actual facts. Officer Farmer gets a call to go to the Golden Living. It's an assisted living facility in Rapid City. There's an aggravated assault. A lady's laying. She has been hit with a bat. She's bleeding. She identifies the perpetrator as a group, including males and females. And she identifies that they were last seen going approximately 150 yards to the north on North 7th Street. The apartment complex is called the Pleasant Hills Village. Officer Farmer, while attending to her, notes that she is being taken care of by nurses, and another call comes over the radio of a gang fight 150 yards away at this Pleasant Hills Village. So you have an assault here on the ground. You have an assault going away 150 yards away. He knows that he has two other officers on the north side of Rapid City. One's detained in a traffic stop, and another's quite a bit away. Officer Farmer believes that these incidents are related in so much as it is approximately 4:30 on a Sunday morning. They're 150 yards apart. They both involve an assault. And just all of his training that he has done, he's been on this assignment for quite a while, leads him to this belief. Now, if you want to take the step of whether that belief was reasonable or not, the dispatcher that actually calls in the gang fight also relates a connection. After the incident is over and he's detained Martina Martinez and Brianna Bear, another officer at the scene says, these have to be related. Farmer is actually on the video saying, you know, I'm not really sure what I have here, but I believe they're related. We have an assault. We have an assault. He sends another officer back to get the victim from the first scene to bring her up to see if she can make an identification. She's already been transported to the hospital. The case reports of the alleged gang fight and the subsequent arrest and the assault have the same case number. So all the elements lead at least to a reasonable basis in this officer's mind of a connection, and he elects to try to sew up both of these by proceeding, leaving a person who is in good hands with the nurses and an ambulance on the way to go and see if he can assist at this other location. Also important...
Let me just ask the question about the objective standard, which is the reasonableness test. I'm assuming that's what you're arguing. Who are you saying didn't apply that? The original commission that looked at this? The officers, the supervising officers? Who didn't apply it correctly?
It was not applied, Justice Meyer Henry, from the first day. What was applied was, I would have done it different. Officer Farmer escalated the situation by using terms I wouldn't have used. In the hearing, Lieutenant Vlieger says, well, I would have done it by getting out of the car and saying, hello? That was his remedy.
The objective standard, wouldn't it be a reasonable officer under the same circumstances, or same or similar circumstances? So how would you show that then? Why wouldn't that be part of the evidence that the finder of fact would listen to?
Well, it should be.
Other officers would do. Wouldn't that be part of the objective standard?
It should be, but it wasn't. You won't find those findings. And like I say, we have to have that basis to connect the law in the facts. And what is really important, and I believe you're hitting on exactly what the point is, if you look at the Cole versus Bone case that we cited, it says, of these objective standards, an officer need not use any particular method within that objective standard. He is free to select what level of, well, actually the quote would be, an officer does not have to use the absolute least amount of force available. An officer need only select a level of force within the range of objectively reasonable force options. So what we gather from that is, when I show up, if I'm going to first engage in presence, I don't have to be wearing the uniform. I just have to do something within that box to show my presence. So I can say, I'm an off-duty police officer. That announces my presence. Here, we activate the sirens. We move to the second box, which is where I think the review below got hung up, is with people saying, in hindsight, I would have got out and said something different. Well, this case specifically tells us an officer need not adhere to any specific language, and certainly not somebody else's hindsight language. They need only follow something within that box. In other words, he need only to give a verbal command. And once he does so, and that is not heeded, he is free to move on to the next level. And so, Justice Meyer Henry, you are absolutely correct in your questioning. You will not find somebody saying, Officer Farmer gave a verbal command, which entitled him, or which was not heeded, and thus entitled him to move on. You will find Officer Farmer gave a verbal command different than a command I would have given, and therefore he is going to be subject to discipline. Because that command, if given a different way, may have led to compliance or may have done this. Now, the whole definition of hindsight is to look backwards and then speculate on the outcome. And that's exactly what the courts say we cannot do. So if you want to flip that, when we talk about what you can't do, is you can't do things arbitrarily. And arbitrary is defined as depending on individual discretion and not fixed by a rule or law. What I've just told you as being the record of the review is nothing more than the textbook definition of arbitrary. Individual discretion. I would have done this. I would have done that, and I believe that would have led to a different result. That is not fixed by rule or law. What is fixed by rule or law is the use of force continuum and the policy of how it is implemented and the undisputed fact that Officer Farmer follows that to the letter down the line and eventually effectuates this arrest. The second part of the analysis then is the fundamental fairness. One of the things that has just absolutely jumped out at me in this whole deal is the police department then went back to justify their decision. They had to go back to a grievance that was decided in 2007, reopen it, look at it, make a different finding, and then apply it so they could say, well, now we have a pattern. Fundamental fairness doesn't allow that. That process in and of itself absolutely takes all the strength out of the collective bargaining agreement for the officers. What that says is it doesn't matter what we adjudicated in the past. We always have the right to go back and reopen it without due process, without input from the officer, change it, and then use it as a basis for later discipline. And it's particularly important in this matter because the pattern established by the department for their just cause part of the determination has three elements. One is the reopened, reassessed, and changed outcome of a previous disciplinary matter done without due process or input. The second is the officer's use of profanity, for which he got a letter saying he should not use profanity on the job. And the third is this matter. So they're using a reopened matter that they changed the outcome.
How did they change the outcome?
Because, Justice Konenkamp, I think that's a great question. The original findings of the first investigation of Michael Slobear was not of excessive force. It was that the force would not have been necessary had the officer not uncuffed a combative.
So it was unnecessary force.
Right. The force, and just to be clear, Officer Stratton specifically said, the force used was necessary. The reason the force had to be used was not. The officer
should have a reprimand letter that said basically he used unnecessary force. What exactly was the reprimand?
The reprimand letter was you used poor judgment. You have a combative detainee, and you know he's combative, but you take off his handcuffs, which then allows him the opportunity to react against you and carry out. He was making threatening comments.
All right, so how did they change that then in this latest thing?
They have now changed that, and then subsequently the report written by Officer Farmer, Detective or Sergeant Stratton found to be inartful, but not intentional. Now they have gone back and have used the language that on review, we find that report to have been embellished, which now affects or gives them the right in this instance to say he is not credible because we find this report embellished, even though on this report, specifically asked Lieutenant Bleeger, show me, we went sentence by sentence, show me what fact he misrepresented. None. It was the spirit of how he wrote it. And specifically at page 177 of the transcript, Lieutenant Bleeger says, if you're asking me to point out a sentence where he is not accurate, I can't. But it's the totality. And that's what this officer's left with. I can write a factually accurate report, but somebody can now say, well, it's the spirit. of your report. And then go back to a report that before was found to be inartful, but not deceptive, and say, well, we think you embellished that too. And that term embellished then gets put in the old one and carried forward for discipline in the new one. And you don't have the opportunity to go back to that old grievance, reopen it, and make your case. So if that's now the standard, there is no grievance that has been resolved in the Rapid City Police Department, regardless of the outcome favorable to the officer, that cannot be reopened and used as a basis for further discipline. And that is not fundamental fairness. And I see my time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Claiborne. Mr. Green, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. Counsel. The issue in this case is whether substantial evidence supports the decision of the South Dakota Department of Labor to uphold the termination of Tim Farmer for excessive use of force. The circuit court found that the record contained ample evidence to support the Department of Labor's decision and the finding of facts. Under established South Dakota law, whether just cause exists to support a termination is determined from the facts and circumstances surrounding that decision. Judge Kern found that the two videos that were entered into evidence in this matter alone provided ample evidence to support the determination that Officer Farmer had used excessive force in violation of the department's policy, and therefore his termination was appropriate. In Hollander versus Douglas County, this court upheld the termination of a deputy sheriff whose misconduct amounted to rudeness and failure to follow instructions. In this case, we have two documented incidences of excessive use of force. If rudeness and failure to follow instructions constitute just cause, excessive use of force absolutely must constitute just cause as well. Mr. Claiborne referenced the objective standard, and he also referenced the Graham case. And I think it's very important to point out what the court said in Graham, specifically that an officer's evil intentions will not make a Fourth Amendment violation out of an objectively reasonable use of force, nor will an officer's good intentions make an objectively unreasonable use of force constitutional. In this case, every objective reviewing authority that has looked at this matter has determined that the use of force by Tim Farmer was unreasonable. The videos of the two incidents, I think, are simply unrefutable. Lawyers can argue about what the videos depict, but simply watching them, I think, shows that, particularly in the Martinez incident, you have an officer who acts in a confused, unorganized manner, makes verbal commands that are inappropriate for the situation, and asks something of people that is completely unreasonable. The video very clearly shows that Tim Farmer didn't affect a traffic stop in this case. The vehicle was stopped, and the occupants were out of the vehicle walking away from Officer Farmer before he pulled up behind it and before he activated the lights and sirens. Their first interaction with him was hearing somebody from behind yelling, "Get on the ground." That's not something that normally happens in the ordinary course of interaction between citizens and police officers. That's not reasonable. And Lieutenant Leader and Captain Thrash and Chief Allender all testified that that was not a reasonable tactic. I believe Warren Poaches, the individual that Mr. Claiborne identified as testifying to the use of force policy, also said that's not a tactic that's taught. But that's just the beginning of the unreasonableness of the actions that...
But doesn't the officer testify, though, or argue that his prior... The prior incident should be considered in that reasonableness test because it's a continuum, and he thought the two incidents were connected and that these were perpetrators. So if that, let's assume that were the case, would this still be an unreasonable request by an officer?
I think.
What if they had been in that? What if they were part of that other incident?
I think that if he had attempted to contact them and tell them, "Stop, I want to talk to you," I think that the reaction of the individuals would have been very different. Because the video shows very clearly that once he approaches Brianna Baer.
Part of that's hindsight, right? I mean, part of this is hindsight in that these two were not connected with the prior incident that he thought where the victim was injured. He thought that this was the same group of people that, and that they could have been the perpetrators. If that were true, is it still an unreasonable request for him?
It's the manner in which the request was made was unreasonable, Your Honor.
Even under those circumstances.
And if you watch the video, what you see is once he has the attention of Brianna Baer, either by interacting with her or going hands-on with her, Martina Martinez comes back. He's got their attention. He can talk to them at that point. But he's not interested in talking to them. He's interested in obtaining physical control of them for some purpose. We're not even sure what that purpose is because Officer Farmer couldn't articulate that purpose at that point. He didn't have probable cause to arrest anyone. He may have had reasonable suspicion to detain them, but even that's questionable because the two calls that were made, the aggravated assault that he left involved three people walking to the north. The disturbance that he was dispatched to, or that he left the aggravated assault for to come down to, involved six males in a dark SUV. These two women were in a Mustang arriving at the scene. So their involvement at best is questionable. But even if he had reasonable suspicion to detain them, the manner in which he chose to do that was clearly unreasonable. After he screams at them to get on the ground and they don't comply, you can see in the video very clearly what happens. He ultimately uses soft hand techniques on Martina Martinez and then lets her go. He chases after Brianna Baer and uses hard hand techniques on her, ultimately affects the arrest of Martina Martinez using hard hand techniques, a higher level of force on the department's use of force continuum. Officer Poach has clearly testified, and the video clearly shows, that Farmer had the ability to handcuff and detain Martina Martinez using the soft hand techniques. He chose not to do that for whatever reason. That in and of itself is the definition of excessive force.
Is this one incident, would that have been enough for dismissal?
I think that any one instance of excessive use of force by a police officer is enough to constitute just cause.
Under the rules, would that fit?
I think it absolutely would fit, Your Honor. The policy very clearly says that excessive use of force is prohibited, and any use of force is expected to be reasonable. So if the force is determined to be unreasonable, that would justify termination. It's not mandatory, but it certainly is sufficient to justify termination. And I think it's important to keep in mind that the use of force continuum is for the protection of the public. And there's been a lot of discussion about the officer's judgment, but the use of force is inherently tied to the officer's good judgment. And if there's an officer whose judgment is questionable, it's the duty of the law enforcement management to protect the public and prevent that individual from being exposed to situations where he may abuse other members of the public. It would be negligent of them for them to allow someone with these issues to continue to act as a police officer. And that is exactly what the discussion was throughout the investigatory process. In Lieutenant Leaguer's initial investigation, in Captain Thrash's memo, and Chief Allender's final determination, the judgment of Tim Farmer is highly questionable in the eyes of the command staff of the Rapid City Police Department. That decision was upheld by Mayor Hanks on appeal from the grievance, by the South Dakota Department of Labor, and by Judge Kern. Everyone who has looked at this has determined that there is clearly excessive force and sufficient basis for those findings. In addition, there aren't any findings of fact that have been set out as being clearly erroneous in this matter. The Department of Labor's findings of fact show excessive force, and other than arguing that they should have come to a different conclusion, by simply reciting the levels of force, the Officer Farmer doesn't take issue with those.
How do you respond to the counsel's statement that the Slow Bear incident was relabeled in order to justify termination?
I think that's an erroneous statement, Your Honor. I don't believe that there was anything that was relabeled.
But he basically said that it was reopened in order to
justify. It was not reopened. It was reviewed. everything that was in the police officer's personnel file at the time, and I think this is true anytime there is a serious event, is open for fair game when looking at the history of the officer and determining, is this a police officer who's had one event that's simply erratic and out of character, or is this part of a pattern? And if you look at the video of the Slow Bear incident, I believe that video also shows that Tim Farmer escalated that situation as well. The video shows a shot into the booking room with Michael Slow Bear seated at a booking table and Officer Farmer standing in front of him, arms crossed, staring down at him. We're unable to determine what's being said because there's no audio of that video, but we know that there is an exchange taking place. And we also know that Michael Slow Bear simply sits there, does not move, before he's grabbed by the arm and thrown headfirst into the wall by Tim Farmer.
I see that the chief of police said that if he had seen that back in 2007, he would have terminated Officer Farmer. But what of counsel's comment that this is a denial of protection for city employees who think that they've got a past issue resolved and now it's revived and reexamined and used as a basis for discipline years later?
Well, I think that really amounts to a reliance argument, Your Honor. The argument is that they have relied on the discipline that was imposed and they should have the right to go about their business without looking back at that. But I think in a case where you've got someone who has embellished the report, has engaged in blatant misconduct, that the chief, I believe, actually said if he'd seen that video, he wouldn't have started an internal investigation. He would have sent it to the state's attorney to consider charges. Captain Thrash certainly said that he would have terminated him immediately. In those instances, I don't think that the employee has a right to rely on that and to say that this is done deal and I will never, ever have to discuss this again. If that was the case, any misconduct could never be viewed in light of the totality of the employee's career. And I think that goes into the face, or flies in the face of the idea of progressive discipline and the fairness that the council has suggested is absent in this case.
Mr. Green, was the cause for termination excessive use of force, or was it by conduct detrimental to the department or the city, which is language right out of the, both are, or I guess their language in the collective bargaining unit is conduct detrimental to the city, or violation of work rules? What was the exact cause? Wasn't it? Well,
I think the exact cause was the excessive use of force that was brought on by the department's, what the department viewed as a lack of good judgment. I think that is the basis for the dismissal. I don't think there was a lot of discussion of conduct on becoming, but really the Martinez incident in and of itself, I believe, would have been sufficient to justify termination. Combined with the video and the Slow Bear incident, I think that the department had no choice but to terminate Officer Farmer at that point. The Hollander case that I mentioned earlier, the sheriff in that case said flat out that although the misconduct was important, the real decision came down to it was a matter of trust or a matter of lost trust. In reading the memos from the command staff, it's clear the Rapid City Police Department has lost trust in Tim Farmer's ability to use good judgment and to follow the use of force policy. The argument that...
Is that the standard, though, loss of trust?
I think that goes to whether or not there is just cause. In light of all of the circumstances, the fact that the command staff may have lost trust, I think, is an important part of determining whether the just cause exists. In and of itself, no, it's not the standard. It's a factor.
It's subjective with the command structure losing trust, where just cause is more of an objective standard, isn't it?
Objective, yes. Just cause is the objective standard, considering all of the facts and circumstances. I think, though, that this court can take a look at all of the reasons that the department has identified for its loss of trust. The embellishment issues that have been identified in the report writing, the multiple instances of excessive force. For 3 years, the 3 years that Tim Farmer is really a police officer on his own out of training, 6 formal complaints and 3 informal complaints. That certainly got the attention of the Rapid City Police Department, and in the letter affirming the termination, I think the chief indicated he had to wonder if this was a case of where there's smoke, there's fire. In, as the chief of a department that has 100-plus officers, the chief has to be able to rely on the officers to follow the policies and to use good judgment. If he can't do that, he can't carry out his responsibility to effectively police the community. One other aspect of this case, I think, shows the issues with Tim Farmer's judgment. That is the fact that he's never acknowledged that any of his actions involving the Martinez case were wrongful in any way. He has simply said, I followed the use of force continuum, and that use of force continuum justifies everything that I did. What he misses, I believe, is that it is his conduct that causes the necessity for additional force to be used.
How does it affect just cause whether he acknowledges he made a mistake or not?
Well, I think that that goes to his judgment, Your Honor. Whether or not he recognizes that he made a mistake, I think, is very important in determining whether or not he has the ability to effectively carry out the duties of a police officer. Police officer's use of force is inherently tied to the judgment that he uses in following that policy or not following it. So I think it ties directly to whether or not just cause exists to determine that his judgment is not of a level that would suffice to allow him to continue as a police officer, if that was the only factor. That's not the only factor in this case, but it's one of the factors. Farmer has the pattern of escalating these incidents. You can see it in the Slow Bear video, you can see it in the Martinez video. Those things in and of themselves justify the termination. I wanted to touch just briefly on the Daugherty criteria that counsel has suggested this court adopt. I would suggest that those criteria, which were created by an arbitrator in an arbitration situation for use in employment arbitration, are not an effective test to apply in just cause termination cases in South Dakota. I think that the court's the test that the court has adopted and has used for many, many years to look at all of the facts and circumstances provides the better rule of law in this case, because it allows for consideration of other factors besides the ones identified in the Daugherty test. If you simply use the Daugherty test, you're limited to those factors, and I don't think that that is appropriate because it can't be applied to all situations. The standards for a police officer are different than the standards for a parks worker, and they're different than the standards for a banker and a lawyer. All of those individuals have different standards that they have to meet, and one set of misconduct for one employee may be irrelevant in one employment context, but it may be very relevant in another. So simply leaving the test as the totality of the facts and circumstances is the best rule of law, and that's what the court should do, in my view. Just a couple other comments about the factual issues that Mr. Claiborne raised. The officer presence issue. He identified the uniform, the lights, and the sirens. Well, if you watch the video, the Martinez and Bear are walking away before Farmer ever gets there. To describe them as fleeing, I don't think is accurate at all, particularly in light of the fact that Martinez comes back once she realizes that Officer Farmer is talking to Brianna Bear, her daughter. So that description, I think, is simply inaccurate. They just didn't know that Farmer was talking to them. The use of the word fleeing is one of those things that would justify a higher use of force on the continuum. But I think it shows that if he had simply used a different method of engaging these two people, the outcome would have been much different. If there are no further questions, I will conclude.
Okay.
The Rapid City Police Department thoroughly investigated this matter. The Department of Labor made extensive findings of fact. Judge Kern found them well supported, and for all of those reasons, City of Rapid City respectfully requests this court to affirm the decision of Judge Kern. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Claiborne, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. To begin, I think one of the most pertinent questions I've heard was that asked by Justice Severson as to why Officer Farmer was discharged. My answer to that is we don't know. This target has moved from day one. If you look at the chief will say he embellished a report. If you look at Vlieger will say he used poor judgment in leaving the aggravated assault scene 150 yards away to go up the road. If you look at Captain Thrash will say he doesn't arrive at a conclusion, but he arrives at a completely different discipline because his report is based on that of Sergeant Peterson. Sergeant Peterson, I believe, actually was the only investigative officer that applied the correct standard. That is, he started from the standpoint of what Officer Farmer, as Justice Meyer Henry has picked up on, believed. And even if that was reasonable to the extent of looking at what other officers perceived as well. And I think that's the basis. And the one word that Mr. Green kept saying that is so opposed to the law is that we object to the manner in which Officer Farmer implemented the policy. And when you talk about the manner of U5, the way you implement any policy may be different. It's not how the policy is implemented that is the standard for just cause. Just cause is, do you have the right to implement that policy? And here, the specific case law says an officer is not required to use the least amount of force. They are given the discretion to implement the force they feel is necessary to effectuate the control, provided that they are acting within the framework of an established policy, guideline, or rule. When we start getting into manner, we start to get outside of the policy and into the arbitrary. And even between the reviewing officers, we learn that their manners would have been different. Even Mr. Green got up here and just said, perhaps something like. The circuit court said, perhaps something like. Those two things weren't the same. Vlieger said he would have said, hello. That's a different man. And when you get down to parsing somebody's own individual preference, you really stray far away from the requirement that we focus on what this officer knew, believed, and reacted upon, because it is an evolving and ever-changing circumstance.
What happens with the judgment, the reviewing entities which describe the actions of Officer Farmer as escalating the situation by his manner of getting out of the car, by his actions? It may be within the objective standard, but he actually escalated the situation.
Two things there. One,
and I start off partly back to where you were when you first were describing it. You said he saw the perpetrators, and these aren't necessarily perpetrators.
And that is probably an artful terminology on my part. He saw, if you go back to just what Officer Farmer, and he does testify in detail of why he was doing what he was doing. And his testimony is, I get to a scene. You have people that come up in front of a police officer. They park in a place where you're not supposed to park. He activates his light. One gets out and goes north. One gets out and goes east. He yells a command, they don't stop. They're gone. Lieutenant Vlieger says they are fleeing. Those are his words. So that's your framework. Farmer has several objectives in mind. One, he knows that there's a reported aggravated assault in this area. He doesn't know if these guys are walking into a hornet's nest. So getting them to stop, maybe for their protection, He doesn't know if they're going to assist, in which getting them to stop is for the protection of others. He doesn't know if they're involved in this aggravated assault 150 yards away. But the totality of the circumstances, at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning, 150 yards apart with this reported gang activity, the bells and whistles are going off in his mind that these are related. The dispatcher says these are related. Officer Doyle comes up later and says they've got to be related. They send an officer back to get the victim to come up to identify. The case reports have the same number. There is ample evidence testified to by Officer Farmer and disregarded by those reviewing that says this is just too much happening too close in too close a proximity, both space and time, to just ignore as and treat as just two coincidental things happening on an early Sunday morning. So when you go back to the judgment, that is exactly why, one, you have a written policy. So you don't get the Monday morning quarterbacking going on. And two, the second part, Justice Severson, and I apologize for straying here, but would be that this idea of something different would have happened had something else had been done is nothing more than speculation by those who weren't involved. And as the court's laying down these rules have said, these are dynamic situations, no two are alike. And when the officer's in there, it's evolving. They're reacting. If you go to the specific facts here, contrary to what counsel has told you, that Martinez voluntarily comes back, she comes back when Officer Farmer has subdued her daughter, pointing and yelling profanities at him, saying, "Get off my daughter." She encroaches his reactionary gap. He says, "Ma'am, back up. Ma'am, back up." Three times. She's the aggressor, and she can't be, by the video and by the testimony, more than a foot away from him, coming at him. He determines she to be the more aggressive party at that point. Let's Brianna Bear up, subdues mom. At the whole time, you can see him and you can hear him calling for backup. He has mom on the car. The other officer now is approaching, and Officer Farmer says, "Come take mom." So he believes this officer is going to come take control of mom because in the interim, mom has told Brianna to flee. She says go, and she says to some location. It's kind of mixed up, but she is definitely telling Brianna to flee. Brianna Bear, get out of here. And I believe it's to an uncle's house or something. This is a situation that's dynamic. This is an officer that's making judgment calls while this is going on. But at every point, he's employing that use of force continuum to the letter. And that has to be the basis to attach the law. And as indicated, that is one of the findings that's just glaringly absent. The other is the re-examination. Justice Konenkamp, I believe you asked about the re-examination. If you look, and what's disturbing about that is the comments by counsel and the writing by Chief Allender that says, "I would use that alone for grounds of termination." So it's going to be factored in this process on that basis. Well, the fundamental fairness is, Officer Farmer, had you done this way back then, Officer Farmer would have had the opportunity to come up and contest and also provide his evidence to keep you from arriving at that decision 2 years later. And I believe that the quote that was in the briefs and in the case law says that these individuals, if they ought to have spoken before but were silent, should now be silent, should be held to that silence, because it is not fair to allow them to speak 2 years after the fact and hope that that speech now will serve as the basis for discipline down the road. As I said before, I think that ability, and if this case stands for that proposition, That ability, standing alone, completely guts the grievance process of the collective bargaining agreement, because at any time, an officer has to know that everything in the past is on the table for your discipline, and that's not fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Claiborne. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.